This is Thursday, as Bill just mentioned, and that means it's time for Connections on our two-tier that we do. Good morning. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, our producer and engineer. Bill, I'm on you twice a week, so please tell people about it if you're so inclined. And by the way, our MSO mail address is msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. And I don't know if this thing is recording or not, but we'll figure it out. Bill Newell is with us. We'll check in with Bill in just a second. Let me tell you a little bit about today's program as I cancel out the music. We will be talking with Salem State Professor Daniel Mulcair, at least Bill will. We'll have politics on the forefront once again as it just continues to take over the headlines. Really two major stories, worldwide, nationally, and locally. And the two major stories would involve the coronavirus, of course, and politics. So Bill will start us off with Professor Mulcair. I'll be talking to Wendell Waters, and she is a multimedia journalist from the Tri-Town Transcript, which is the website of the local Wicked Local newspaper up in the Topsfield area. And she'll be talking about Wendell in the Wild. The blue economy, whatever that means, and other economies of color with Dave Radigan. Dave just kind of looked differently. And we'll talk Beer Pod with Tim Kearns. And I want to point out that this was taped. We recorded this evening, not today, so this is not going to be live. We're not going to be drinking beer here. Welcome aboard, Bill.
Oh, so you guys tasting during the program. Is that what I hear?
Yeah, we did an actual authentic beer tasting. My first ever.
I didn't think Tim probably didn't have to twist your arm too hard to get you to do that. Yeah.
No. Right. Well, the picture on the website, you'll see they're in Guinness glasses. The Guinness glasses are spun around, and those are my glasses. But it's a unique craft beer that he'll be talking about, and that can in particular is of major interest, although you don't really get the idea of it with the photograph. But, yeah, we're not going to be doing that live. And I know that you'll be talking with, we'll get to this in a little while with Dave about the economy, the colors of the economy. But, Bill, what comes to mind is we usually open our Connections program with a little discussion about current events and maybe our opinions on them.
Yeah, there's the blue economy, which is a story that is in today's Gloucester Times, Salem News, and so on. But there's also blue collar workers, green collar workers, green economy, different. So we're going to talk about the colors, Dave, a little bit later on in the program. What's Wendell in the Wild? What is that, Rick?
When I was researching the eagle situation here on the North Shore and the return of the eagles in a big way, the American bald eagle, I came across something called Wendell in the Wild. It's a podcast that Wendell Waters does. She's a journalist up in the Topsfield Ipswich area, and it's usually done once or twice a month, and she goes off into the woods with her microphone and experts on whatever it is they're looking at, and it goes from bugs I was going to say baboons, but we don't have baboons in the area, but from A to Z in terms of flora and fauna.
All right, okay.
So, I should have suggested to her that maybe she should take a camera with her, but it's very descriptive and it's a lot of fun. And they've discovered some interesting things along the way in their search for bugs and plant life and animals.
Well, I would think, you know, down the road, maybe if all goes well today, we could have her back and she can bring some bugs in, and I think that'd be neat.
No, yeah. Not having bugs in this studio, Bill. Not going to happen.
All right. Okay. Well, you know, the coronavirus thing, we've been hearing a lot about it nationally, and I think the governor, I actually didn't follow the news that carefully on this piece yesterday, but I know that he came out this week and has made some real statements on how Massachusetts is preparing. Still says the threat level or risk level is low, which that appears to be true, but ramping up things, and so obviously it's a concern to everybody. Somebody was saying that some of the stores made a run on some of the products, whether it be paper products or obviously sanitizing products, those kinds of things. That people have made a run on those in some of the stores.
Well, I would point people to the American Journal of Nurses for more information. It's the blog of the American Journal of Nursing. And it's called COVID-19 for Nurses. Skip the rumors and stick to the basics. And there is an audio version. Perhaps I could post that. I wish I had known about this earlier and we can get a hold of it. And it describes what a pandemic is. We are not in a pandemic situation. It describes, you know, more about the coronavirus and concerns and so on, and gives statistics that are real. And if you read this article, Bill, and again, it's from AJNOffTheCharts.com, AJNOffTheCharts.com, American Journal of Nursing, it really is kind of reassuring in that, okay, there's no reason to panic. Pay attention, yeah, and, you know, the stuff about washing your hands and wiping surfaces, that's just a reiteration of what we ought to be doing anyway. So it's good, I guess, to be a little overprotective, but, you know, panic is not necessary.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, on our North Shore Today post, if people are looking, there's a story that is on there. It's a text story. So in other words, you scroll down on the North Shore Today post today, and it's on Gloucester, how they are preparing for the coronavirus or some related things. But it also has a lot of links to the CDC, to the state website, and to the Gloucester website as well. So if you're looking for something with a little information and with some easy to click on links, that's the place to go.
Yeah, and I will add some to that on this site as well. And it's, you know, it's certainly of interest, and it's a terrible story for those who do get it. There's a lot of, I'm using that word. I hope it's overhype and it doesn't really come to a bad situation. So there we go. Bill, what else is going on? I know the tournament is rapidly coming to an end here in high school basketball and hockey.
Yeah, it is. We're coming down to it. Big day in basketball at the Songus Center for a lot of North Shore teams. And we're planning to do two live broadcasts on Saturday. That would be the Beverly Belmont game and the Lowell Lynn English game. We have a promo now up on the website on that piece. But those are two games we look to do live. But there are other games going on there as well. St. Mary's boys are playing there on Saturday, and so are the St. Mary's girls. The Pentucket girls are playing there, Amesbury girls. So, let me think here, Newburyport must be there too, right? Yeah, Newburyport is in there as well. But we'll get that schedule up a little bit later on. That's not till Saturday, but it's a big day out at Lowell, so there's a lot of stuff happening out at Lowell, and we'll try to have updates on it. We will have updates, unless something happens, on Saturday on the website, a big hoop day, the Big North final day. And what's funny is that I love this day because you got the North champions, you got kind of regional champs in the different divisions, but with the new playoff system that they just passed in the MIAA, which will take effect in another year, not next year, that these North title games go away. And I think that's too bad. I understand why they're doing it. I have mixed feelings on the whole piece, but I just love the idea that you get a North champion, you get a Lowell and a Lynn English playing, you get one of the top teams in the Middlesex League taking on a team from the Northeastern Conference, and those kinds of things. So yeah, it's a tough call, but it's a great day at the Songus Center, and I guess I think it's both the boys and girls top 1-3 divisions will be playing there.
Well, for some of us, Bill, back in the day when the old Tech Tourney was going on and so on, anything west of Boston was New York, so it didn't belong in our tournaments anyway. So this is kind of a new twist for us old timers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how it plays out. There's a lot of griping about it, but we'll save that for another day and another show.
Absolutely.
I know the sports writers touched on that a little bit in the Salem News podcast this week, but there's a lot more to talk about that piece and what it means and so on. So, yeah. Just a quick note, Dr. Daniel Mulcair, who's head of the political science department of Salem State, he'll be up next, kind of reacting to what's happened nationally on Super Tuesday, a look at what he sees moving forward, and just get his take on the whole thing. On what was really a historic, remarkable political past 72 hours or 4 days in American politics.
All right, looking forward to it. And again, stay tuned for a lot more coming up with Professor Mulcair, with Wendell Waters, Dave Radigan, and the Beer Pod with Tim Kearns. Bill, thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers to you.
All right, Schlantia. All right, that's Bill Newell. And again, we've got our first interview coming up this morning here on Connections. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. And let's just go and do a little bit of business here, and we'll be right back.
You'll love the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, as they feature a menu to please everyone. Start your meal with your choice from a dozen delicious appetizers. There are also soups and fresh salads. Dinner selections include burgers, sirloin tips, chicken parmesan, chicken piccata, and then there's seafood, clams, haddocks, salmon, lobsters, and fish tacos, plus a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps. Let the Bradford Tavern host your events or functions set in unique spaces. Open 6 days a week, Tuesday through Sunday. The Bradford Tavern, Route 133 Rowley, and BradfordTavern.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and patio doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our three locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Check out live sporting events on MSO News Sports and exclusive interviews with coaches and players. When it comes to local news and sports, MSO News Sports keeps you connected to the big stories. Dr. Daniel Mulcair, the head of the Political Science Department, Salem State University, is joining us. And Dan, welcome. Welcome. Great to have you back with us.
Thank you. It was a pretty eventful night on Tuesday.
It certainly was. I mean, I look at that. I got back in kind of late, you know, like around 9:30, 10. That's when I started turning it on. But that's when it was all happening on Tuesday night. But, you know, I'm struck by the fact that the James Clyburn endorsement just late last week was probably the most effective political endorsement ever in what happened in South Carolina. And then what happened, which is a historic night on Super Tuesday.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think that Biden was going to do well in South Carolina anyway. What we didn't know was how well that Biden was going to do. And the fact that he won by 20 or 30 points over Sanders when the race had closed into about a six to two, like a small single digit lead for Biden earlier in the week was quite astonishing. And then there was just this coattails effect that happened after that. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that Biden had a lot of what's called earned media, which is when you do well, then the press focuses on you and you get a lot of airtime that you don't have to pay for. Secondly is that Super Tuesday states are, a lot of them are in the South, and that was set up by the Democratic Party in order to give African-Americans more of a say in who the candidate's going to be. And that makes sense in terms of the Democratic Party being a party where the African-American community is the backbone of it, that you want to make sure that they have a major say in who the candidate is. And they are very much tied to the Obama legacy and to Joe Biden. So they were an actual fit for supporting. And I think with the Clyburn endorsement and just that demographic group, it's not surprising that especially the Deep South states went to Biden. But what I was surprised at was that once the polls closed in both Virginia and North Carolina, that they immediately called those for Biden. You didn't have any too early to call or too close to call. It was just immediately to Biden. So that showed me that Biden was going to have a big night. And what I think was even more interesting to me and shocking to me was Massachusetts, which I did not think that Biden was going to win. He was just a week ago in a position where he might not even get any delegates out of Massachusetts. And Sanders was up on Warren by 5 points, and for Biden to come back and win in a New England state, and also he is doing the same in Maine, it's like almost tied up there. That tells me that these coattail effects is not just for African American voters, it's for the Democratic Party in general.
Man, you
you touched on so many things that I was going to ask you about, so I don't have to ask you about some of those things. But the other piece, Dan, here is a Democratic Party strategy, which I feel it was a strategy. You may correct me on this, but was when Klobuchar and Buttigieg got out over the weekend, endorsed Biden, but Warren stayed in for Super Tuesday. I thought I didn't think it would have. I think that was very impactful, but I never thought it could have the impact that we just saw on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and I think for Texas it was impactful in the sense that Beto O'Rourke also came out and endorsed Biden that same day.
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty big. And then obviously Minnesota went for Biden. She delivered that state. So I think it was just a way to kind of clear the lines out. And I think what happened is that, well, this is what I was thinking, and this is why I was shocked by what happened yesterday. They're pulling out, endorsing Biden, even with O'Rourke in Texas. I was like, okay, they're doing that so that Biden can get viability in California, because he might not have hit 15% in the way things were looking before South Carolina. It looked that Biden might not hit 15% in California, which means he would get no delegates at all. So what I was reading from this is like, okay, they're doing it so that Biden can go from like 13 or 14%, maybe up to 17 or 18%. But he got much more than that. And he was able to keep the delegate. He kept the state from being a runaway.
Yeah.
And then you're also correct in terms of Warren not dropping out means that Sanders did not win Massachusetts. We're talking on Wednesday, not Thursday, so it's still not clear where Maine's going to end up, but Sanders would have easily won Maine. It would have been much closer in Texas, and Minnesota would have been much closer. And then also Colorado, I think Warren did get some delegates there, and those would have gone to Sanders. So that was also important. That was interesting to me because, as you were saying, the Democratic establishment, Barack Obama, Paul Buttigieg, and others, to get them out of the race and clear this path for Biden.
And again, when we look at the results from Tuesday night, again, the Biden bounce was remarkable, as you noted, across different demographics or different states, let me put it that way, with different constituencies within those states. But again, I guess what I'm going to ask you here is, so I could see that happening in a state or a couple of states or the southern states, but it went across the board. So what were Democratic primary voters thinking going into Tuesday? Why did they make that decision?
The only codicil I want to put onto that is that Latino voters, unlike 4 years ago where they didn't support Sanders, like across the board, especially in Texas and really especially in California, backed Sanders. So that was the interesting thing to me, is that African-American voters and Latino voters voting differently, showing that there's different interests that those two populations have. I think the general tendency was for African Americans, they trust the Obama legacy. The Democratic establishment is not a fan of Bernie Sanders, and so they wanted to back the most viable candidate that was still in the race, and that was Joe Biden. So you had all of the endorsements lining up and the path cleared out. And I think Warren actually did. I thought Warren was doing Sanders a favor when she totally dismantled Bloomberg at the debate, and just Bloomberg's record dismantled him, but she helped, like, eviscerate him. But it seems that she helped Biden more, because another reason that Biden did so well is that Bloomberg did so poorly.
Exactly, right. And she did take Bloomberg out pretty hard. That's for sure. So
some people on, like, I'm on leftist Twitter, so like just following that, it's some of the people who are annoyed with Warren right now, you know, acknowledge that she took out Bloomberg, but also feel that she put a damper on Sanders as well by not doing what Klobuchar and Buttigieg did in endorsing, you know, dropping out and endorsing Sanders.
No, and I get that. I think she's got a big decision, again, as we talk Wednesday and not Thursday when this airs. Hey, I got to ask you just a couple things. Last things is moving forward. March 10, we have Idaho, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, North Dakota, and Washington State. I'm just looking at some of those states. I got to think that Sanders can win some of those states. I know some are close. Obviously, Michigan's a big delegate state, I would imagine, as well as Missouri and the state of Washington and so on.
Yeah, and I was pretty annoyed the last few days because after South Carolina, I looked at all the polls and I was like, these are completely useless. And especially when Klobuchar and Buttigieg dropped out, I'm like, I have no feeling for what's going to happen on Tuesday. Right. And then when Massachusetts happened, that sent me a signal that these northern states, like Michigan, might not be as natural of a Bernie fit as I thought they would be. I haven't looked at any of the polls for the 10th yet, and I wouldn't want to for a couple more days until I see how things settle out. I would think Washington would be more competitive for Sanders. I think Michigan might be. And judging from what happened in Utah, I would think Idaho could be a Sanders state. Mm-hmm. But I think with the quote-unquote Joe-mentum, it might be that voters are just more inclined to go with the person who's in the lead. I think the next debate's, on the 15th?
Yes.
Right. So, I mean, that's the other thing is that it would have been better for Sanders for there to be a debate between before those debates, before those primaries on the 10th, because I think he needs to try to reset the narrative, and he's not going to be able to do that unless there is a debate.
Yeah, in politics, though, a week or two can be a lifetime, I think, right? Especially in this cycle, what we're seeing here.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that you're going to have more endorsements for Biden over the next few days. It'll be interesting to see if Warren does drop out again. This is Wednesday. If she endorses Biden or Sanders, that'll send a very interesting signal to the party, whoever she chooses. I don't think Sanders has a chance at all if Warren doesn't drop out, and B, if she doesn't endorse Sanders. I think that would make it super duper duper difficult for him to win, because he already has a very tough track ahead, because he's down in delegates, and it's very difficult to make up delegates once you have a deficit in the way that the primary system is set up in the Democratic Party.
Dan, I've got one last question for you. Bernie lost 4 years ago in the primary process, was very gracious about it. I'm wondering how he handles things moving forward here, whether he, he's been running for president for 6 years. He's, you know, obviously he's been running since the last election, since Trump won, you know, in doing the legwork needed to go around the country and so on. It's a lot of work. And I'm just wondering if what you think, I mean, his supporters, I mean, how angry will they be? Or a bigger question, how angry will Bernie be about what just happened?
Well, my hope is this. Full disclosure, I'm a Bernie supporter. And I share a lot of his politics. And so, like, I follow a lot of people who are also Bernie supporters. And there's kind of, I think, two ways of thinking about it. One is that you take the motto seriously, not me, us. And that he says that the number one priority is to get Trump out of office. And if that's the case, then even if he loses, he will come into line and work very diligently, especially with those groups, young people and Latinos, to get them out to vote in November. But I think there is also a case to be made that, you know, the Democratic establishment that is backed by people with a lot of money didn't want to see him to succeed and worked worked every possible angle they could to prevent his path to the nomination, so that'll probably leave some bad feelings. And I know that there are people who are Bernie supporters who are like, oh, I'll just get out the election. And that, you know, if you do think that Donald Trump is a existential threat, then, you know, that's a dangerous proposition. But the other thing is that there's, and I think there's two theories of the case to be made. One is that the Bloomberg argument that the path to victory is winning over dissatisfied Republicans and former Republicans and independents that are conservative. And then there's Bernie's case, which is that you activate voters that haven't voted before. And judging from some of the election results, it seems that voter turnout among young people is down from 4 years ago across the board by like 3 or 4 or 5%. So it's not the promise that Sanders is making is to build a strong grassroots coalition might be true, but it's not necessarily bringing out huge numbers of new voters that you would need in order to beat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think what Sanders did or has been doing is very important to show that there's a way to be electorally viable without taking money from super PACs and from billionaires. But it's a tough road ahead. I mean, Joe Biden didn't spend any money or have a grassroots campaign in Massachusetts or in many other states, and yet he was still able to just ride the muscle memory of the Democratic Party and win convincingly in many states yesterday, or on Tuesday.
Gotcha. Well, Dan, great insights. I'll tell you, it's interesting and great talking with you and to get your take on all of this. And I think we'll hopefully we can check back here again sometime down the road and talk some more about what's happening, you know, nationally or in locally, if whatever that may happen. But yeah.
Thank you. And you're right. The election cycle has been very interesting this year.
Staggeringly interesting as of this past week. Yeah. Dr. Daniel Mulcair, the head of the Political Science Department at Salem State University here on MSONewsSports.com.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, we're back now with Wendell Waters. I finally got a hold of Wendell Waters, who is a multimedia journalist up in Topsfield, currently writing for the Tri-Town Transcript, which is one of the wicked local newspapers. And also, we're going to talk about a podcast that she has. But first, let me welcome Wendell. Welcome to MSO.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The first thing I want to talk about is your journalism career in terms of Wicked Local, because Wicked Local is a relatively new concept. I think it probably began about 10 years ago or so, if I have that right. And it's an amazing idea of having these local newspapers, and I don't know if they're daily or weeklies, but tell me a little bit about your involvement with the Tri-Town Transcript.
Sure, yeah. So the Tri-Town Transcript was the print edition for a long time, and the website is boxford.wickedlocal. Mm-hmm. Wicked Local is our online brand, if you want to think of it that way.
I see. Okay, yep.
Yeah, yeah. And I did 5 years with the company. This was a number of years ago, and now I came back, and I've been with them for about 5 years. And I cover a little bit of everything. That's what we do in community journalism. I could be at a hockey game one night and covering a canine drill with the police the next day.
Sort of like what we do, same type stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's what the attraction is. And, you know, before we get into some other things, tell me a little bit about what's going on up in that area, because I notice on the most recent post that you have, you talk a lot about the election. And I know on Cape Ann and on the North Shore in general, yesterday's primary, especially on the Democrat side, brought out a lot of voters. I think it was something around 30 to 35%. So how was it up there in your part? And by the way, I should mention that the Tri-Towns would be Boxford, Middleton, and Topsfield. So what'd you glean from yesterday's goings-on?
Yeah, the turnout was great at the polls, pretty much steady all day, and then there was the big rush around dinner time.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Biden pretty much walked away with it in the tri-towns. He won handily on the Democratic side in all three of my towns. However, I should say also that a lot of people came out to show their support for President Donald Trump.
Really?
Even so he's not facing a huge challenge this time around, but a lot of people came out to show their support for him.
You know, in your travels, did you get any surprise from people, you know, with the fact that Elizabeth Warren didn't do so well in her home state?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to swing back around and talk to people, but yeah, I think in general it was a little bit of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think she's been a polarizing figure, and I think people are focusing, the Democrats are focusing on who has the best chance to win in November. And I think that's why a lot of people voted for Biden.
All right. Anything else you want to mention about, first of all, about your news coverage up there? Because, and the other thing that, now your posts are daily on the website, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and how often is the print version, how often does that go out?
The print is once a week,
mm-hmm.
and the print is now called the Chronicle and Transcript because they merged it with two other papers.
Oh, okay.
Now there are six communities in that print edition.
Okay. So you're a pretty busy lady.
I am.
All right. Very good. Now, when do you find time to tell me about this podcast? It's called Wendell in the Wild, and you do this. Well, you tell me about Wendell in the Wild. Why should I do it? I'm talking to you.
Sure, yeah. I didn't pick the name, by the way. My colleagues did. they decided it should be Wendell in the Wild. I love bugs and animals and nature and the ocean and all of that good stuff. And so I wanted to throw something fun into my work week that I'm extra passionate about, but that I also knew our readers would be interested in. The Tri-Towns are very rural. You know, Middleton has a business strip on 114 and Topsfield has a significant downtown, but in general, the three communities are very rural and people are very interested in environmental stuff. So that's how I got started on it. And I can do spiders 1 month, and then the next month we're doing a hike near a beaver dam.
All right, I'm covering my eyes because you said spiders.
I know.
here's the thing. Last month we talked with people. We talked with the Audubon people up at Joppa Flats, and we talked with Ipswich. We talked about birds, and we talked about finding bald eagles and sighting bald eagle sightings. And I want to let you know that I want to know about everything that I can know about except bugs. Bugs scare the bejeebers out of me, but you like them.
I love bugs.
Okay. Oh, my Lord. Well, I'll just skip over those then, okay? So you've got so much
others. We don't have to talk about it, but I did a little stint in Arizona just for a year and a half,
mm-hmm.
and the bugs were phenomenal.
I lived in Texas for 4 years. I'm aware.
You get it, yeah.
When I was a sophomore in high school, we were supposed to do a bug collection, and we're supposed to mount the bugs and, you know, name them, you know, the seven kingdoms or seven orders or whatever they are. And I squashed all my bugs, so I didn't do too well in that. But yeah,
you wouldn't be alone in that.
No, I guess not. But tell me some of the most redone or some of interest, because your podcasts are available on demand. They're online, and anybody can get to them. So tell me more about your favorite stuff and what you've been doing.
Sure. So one of the latest ones, we did a hike with Boxford Police Chief James Ryder, who grew up in Boxford and knows the land there like the back of his hand. And he took us on a hike up to Bald Hill, it's called, which isn't bald anymore. It's grown in over the years. But they used to ride horses up there. It's a really cool, interesting place to go birding. But on the way up, we stopped at a little cemetery, a tiny cemetery for a particular family, and a man who fought in the Revolutionary War is buried there.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So that was really cool. So not only did we get to, you know, learn about the topography there and the animals, and we walked by a really, really big beaver dam, really long and really significant, that's changed everything there. But we also got to stop in and get this little bit of history.
Well, I was going to say, this seems like a journey of revelation or a journey of discovery.
Yep.
So where do you get your ideas, or, you know, how do you figure out what you're going to do next?
Well, my podcast co-host and I, that's Chris Stevens, mm-hmm. We sit down and we chat about what's going on. We reach out to people in the community to get ideas from them, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And see what, yeah.
Do you have a favorite? I noticed one thing here. You've got a Boxford talking about a former missile site. I mean, tell me about that.
Oh, yes. That was a pretty cool one, too. Yeah. So it was I think it was a Nike missile site back in the day that they never really went forward with. They had blasted the area,
mm-hmm.
but they never really built the missiles there. So, and over the years, that has really filled in. And now there are all these really neat little reservoirs of water, and the animals have come back, and it's lush and green, and it's really, really lovely place to hike and see the other S word that people hate, snakes,
mm-hmm.
And turtles, and all kinds of good stuff.
I don't mind snakes, but yeah, spiders do it for me. So this is all in Boxford, where the former middle site was, missile site?
Yes, yeah,
all right. Exactly. So do you have a favorite podcast that you've done so far, something that really stands out, or pretty much like we do with our sportscast in particular, we sort of like them all. But every now and then there's one that says, okay, this was a great game, or this was a great effort by a kid. Anything you know, really special that hits your mind on these discovery tours?
Well, there were two. I think the one with Chief Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
Was really neat about the missile site.
Yeah.
And then we also interviewed Pike Messenger over in Middleton, who is with the stream team over there. And he's an older gentleman, and we were joking that he doesn't walk through the forest, he plows through it. Goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was really impressive. But he knows a lot about amphibians and the things that live in vernal ponds, and he knows the topography in Middleton like the back of his hand. So that was another great one.
So it sounds like there's a lot to see and still discover, even though you're out there all the time. It's we have a pretty diversified area up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I learned something new. This is the thing I love about my job the most in general. I learn something new every day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're in the same boat, right? You
mean, absolutely. Well, this is the thing, what we do. I don't know about you, but to me, everyone has a story to tell, and I want it.
Yes.
So that's the way.
That's great.
Well, Wendell, what's coming up next? You guys have anything planned in terms of your podcast?
Well, we were looking at doing something on the kinds of critters people find living in their cars.
Oh, no.
not necessarily that they want them there.
Right.
So we did some background work. You know, calling some mechanics and all. So we may do something on that.
Sounds great. Okay, the best way to get a hold of Wendell in the Wild, how do I direct people to that?
Just go to, let me think about that. The easiest way, just Google Wendell in the Wild podcast.
That always works.
That's the easiest thing to do.
All right, Wendell, stay in touch. I'm going to be calling you every now and then to get a story from the Tri-Town area.
That's great. Call me anytime.
All right. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to listen to the next podcast.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care, Wendell. That is Wendell Waters from Wendell in the Wild. She is also a multimedia journalist up in the Tri-Town area, Boxford, Middleton, and Topsfield. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender. Joining us at this time is Dave Rattigan, teacher, comedian. Those two go together, by the way. But, Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Bill. It's nice to be here again.
Dave has joined us from time to time on the Connection Show. And, Dave, I know a story that caught your eye, which was in the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, is the story about they had a presentation at the North Shore Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and it was about the blue economy. What's the blue economy?
You know something? It was interesting because I had never heard the term, and I guessed correctly that it had to do with, you know, coming, deriving an economy from the sea, which obviously, and I saw it in the Gloucester Times, so absolutely that makes sense because if the obviously Gloucester was built on a blue economy, although I went to look for it, and I didn't see a lot. Here's the definition, according to the expert that they had, Catherine Carl, a professor from UMass Amherst's Gloucester Marine Station. She said, and I'm going to quote from Paul Layton's story in the Gloucester Times, the Salem News. She described that the blue economy as a sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods and jobs, and ocean ecosystem health. So I think it's a little bit of both. It's not oil drilling, although it's interesting because I don't think it's oil drilling, but it's you know, it's aquaculture, it's robotics, it's a lot of these things that are kind of new industries that that are coming out of the sea. A lot of it is aimed at sustainability and research, and it's a pretty interesting sector of the market. I think it's a little bit like the green economy, which at a certain point you would say the green economy, you would say forestry. Now you would say things like it's a sustainability ecological industries. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And, of course, it's different. Blue economy, by the way, is different from – this is what I found, by the way. I found four economies that are associated with color. This is my extensive research that lasted about a half an hour on Google. And I came up with this. Have you ever heard of a pink economy?
I have not heard of a pink economy, no.
It's services and other businesses serving the LGBT community. Certainly it makes sense.
I would have thought it would have been a rainbow economy.
Yeah, I'm don't blame the messenger. I'm just the person who dug this out. There's also a thing called the black economy, which is, you want to guess what that is?
Well, I mean, there's I've heard, you know, is it the underground economy?
It is. And the perfect time to talk about it because it's tax season. Illegally undeclared, you know, from on your taxes, et cetera, et cetera. That's the black economy. As opposed to the bleak economy, which is my personal tax form this year. But it's interesting. The other thing is I also looked up collars because when I heard the blue economy, I thought, here's what I thought was funny. Blue economy, you know, they've declared this to be the blue economy. And I'm thinking, well, you know, if you're a blue collar worker, why can't you claim the blue economy, you know, from trades and tradesmen? Mm-hmm. But you can't because somebody else has stolen it from you, these sustainability people from the ocean. But, you know, the blue collar is builders, plumbers, electricians, laborers. Green collar is both the people who work in sustainability and also people who are arborists and, commercial tree care and landscapers, things like that.
And then a subset of that group, Dave, would be the green thumb economy.
The green thumb, which would be my mother in the garden.
Yep, yeah.
Yes. Pink collar. Had you heard of pink collar?
Pink collar, like a pink collar worker, you're saying?
Yeah, a pink collar worker.
No, I have not.
It's interesting because I found two different definitions, and I had heard about a definition. Where it started was for women who worked in the factories during the war in World War II. They had pink, and before, by the way. But the pink collar was basically women who worked in factories was one definition I had always heard. But what I've what I did a little research is it's the working class service industry, jobs typically held by women, and also caregiving industries, jobs typically held by women. Gold collar, which I had never heard of. Had you heard of gold collar?
Gold collar. No, not at all. No.
Yeah, it's multidisciplinarian knowledge worker who combines intellectual labor with skills, for example, a computer engineer, as opposed to a lower level knowledge worker, such as an input operator, something like that. I would
think, Dave, you'd be a gold collar worker because of all that you do.
Yeah, if I made more gold, I'd be more of a copper collar guy. you know, given what I make, I think I'm a copper collar, maybe a nickel collar.
I feel like I'm a dog collar worker myself, but yeah.
A choke chain.
A choke collar, yeah, a choke chain, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's this thing called purple collar, which is jobs that combine an element of both the blue and the white collar workers. And of course, we didn't even talk about the white collar. Obviously, the white collar is traditionally the office jobs, you know, the professional jobs where people are paid a salary and sit behind desks and do who knows what, lawyers, doctors, et cetera. And then you get purple collars, which is a little skilled worker who's kind of halfway between the white and the blue collar. Brown collar. Had you heard of this?
Brown collar? No.
The military. Military personnel,
all right.
Which makes sense. It's a reflection of the uniform.
Yep, kind of like a camouflage kind of a collar, yeah.
Yep. Do you know why the blue collar was called blue collar? Blue collar workers were called blue collar?
Because of denim, blue?
Denim shirts.
Yep.
You're a genius.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, if I had a prize to give, I would give it to you for that one.
Yeah.
Black collar worker.
Black collar worker. Nope, I'm lost.
It's manual laborers in industries where people get dirty, such as mining or oil drilling. Also, in some cases, black collar is referred to the people who are in illegal professions, like thugs and henchmen.
Mm. The black market? Yeah.
I suppose that must be where it comes from. Yeah. Gray collar, which is usually older workers.
Yeah, maybe you'd be a black collar worker now that I think about it, Dave. But
was that me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be good. I'd be good at that. I'd be a good secondary story man, second story man, as long as I didn't have to climb too high. Gray collar workers, red collar workers. Do you want to guess what a red collar worker is?
No, my question is, how many more colors are there? I mean...
There are only a couple.
Okay.
There are only a couple. I got three more to go.
Okay.
All right. You're pretty bored by this, right?
What is a red collar worker?
No. Tell the truth. You're bored by it. You don't want to talk about these collars. I understand. It's a government worker, or if you're in China, it's a member of the Communist Party.
Oh, okay.
I got two more collars for you. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Orange collar.
Oh man! I mean, are they like pumpkin patch workers?
No, that's an excellent guess, though. It's an excellent guess. If only you were doing your essay for your college boards.
No,
it's prison inmates, laborers from prison because they wear orange jumpsuits.
Oh, okay.
It's called an orange collar profession. And finally,
you didn't tell me it was bright, that reflective orange. I thought it was more of a pumpkin kind of orange. I'm sorry. Okay.
Is that what threw you off? Is it the shade of the orange?
Yeah, I didn't know it was like a modern kind of orange, like a reflective orange. Like those are bright jumpsuits. You're right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think the fault is in my research, clearly. And finally, my last one, scarlet collar.
Man, I would not know what a scarlet worker, collar worker would be.
Workers in the sex industry.
See, I wouldn't think they would have any collars, to be honest with you.
Maybe they're talking about the receptionist. I don't know.
There you go.
I don't know. Those are my collars.
So we got the blue economy. We started with the blue and economy, and we ended up with the scarlet collar workers. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I'll let you make that connection. I'm not going to make that connection. But the blue economy is a good idea because we've got a wonderful ocean and we should sustain it. And if some of these things can help feed people, like aquaculture, I think that's a great thing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Dave, one last thing before you leave us and do more research. Where are you? where are you performing tonight?
Tonight I'm at the Hideaway in Salisbury. Speaking of the ocean, we're right near the ocean in Salisbury. Show starts at 7 o'clock, and it's a little place called the Hideaway, and it should be a fun little show.
Gotcha. All right, good talking with you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for all the research that you do to keep us informed.
Thanks
for being with us here on Connections.
fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
Hi, welcome back to the Beer Pod now with Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim, and this is our third edition of the Beer Pod, once again in memory of the Beer Snob, and I hope you look at our last edition. We actually have Liam's... Liam Flanagan was the Beer Snob, and we have his video up there that he did on a tasting. And we have a very special treat today, eh?
Yes, Rick. We have from Trillium, as I mentioned last week, one of my good friends, Matt Lewis, on his way home from Connecticut, stopped at Treehouse Brewing in Charlton, Mass., and they are one of the top three brewers, basically, in the country. And one of the beers that I selected amongst the coffee milk stout, entitled Spiritual Unrest.
Spiritual what?
Spiritual Unrest.
Okay, that's...
And the neat thing about craft beers is... unique names that the breweries give to the various selections that they create, and the unique labeling that is on there. And if you take a look at the light of that, you actually would be very into that particular
Absolutely.
Label,
yeah.
As it is interstellar.
It's interstellar, and it's almost 3D-ish.
Yeah.
And almost holographic. Wow, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah. And
this is the name of this particular stout is Spiritual Unrest.
Unrest.
Now, what? Before you get into the rest of this, what is a stout?
What is a stout? Well, it is a descendant. In my reading, and I just want to take a brief moment because I did bring a beer guide with me tonight. I meant to bring it last week, but again, the mind like a sieve sometimes, is Randy Mosher's Tasting Beer, an insider's guide to the world's greatest drink. And it is encyclopedic in nature, giving the history of beer itself. He gets into the glassware, the history of tankards that beer has been served in. It is just a great journey through again beer, which is as old as the hills, going back to when man first decided that I'm going to be sedimentary, I'm going to harvest grain, and what can I do with this stuff? So in my reading and coming on it, the history of a stout, again, as a dark beer, came from the history of porter, and it has actually eclipsed porters, a dark beer, as the most popular type. Guinness, again, one is probably the most well known and the most popular of all the stouts. And the term stout, actually reading from the book, is a strong black beer. It goes back at least to 1630, when it was applied to stout butt beers that eventually went on to be named porters. But now the term stout has surpassed porters. I actually enjoy a porter because it doesn't seem as heavy as most stouts. I enjoy a very earthy, heavy tasting, and they come in different types, okay, in terms of strengths. They're not alcohol, but just strength of taste.
Okay, well, now, from what I've read, Guinness is not particularly heavy in alcohol. It's like 4.8, something
right.
like that.
And that it's not makes heavy, it very drinkable.
And it's not heavy in calories either.
No.
It's very akin to a regular, in 12 ounces, a regular lager, American lager.
Right.
Now, I want you, can you read this? Or
yeah.
You've got to read this label. It's pure poetry.
Oh, and a lot of these beers, their descriptions of the contents usually border on the poetic.
Okay, and this is what's the name of this beer again?
Spiritual Unrest. Utilizes a natural process, Ethiopian coffee renowned for producing heavy berry flavors, particularly blueberry, and coupled with a mild infusion of blueberry puree. The result is dark, mysterious, harmonious, and highly enjoyable.
Dark mystery.
It pours pitch black, and
we're looking at the glasses in
front of us,
yep.
And it is pitch black in the glass and releases aromas and flavors of milk chocolate, subtle blueberry, and coffee ice cream. The coffee and fruit are congruous, producing an outcome that is greater than the sum of its parts. Okay? Now, again, we're going to go through the proper process of having this, and we are going to drink this beer.
Okay? Well, I wanted to get a picture of it and,
no, we
and
can
post it, but maybe you could do that and send it to me. We need to get a picture of the can and the poured stout as well.
Well, we can give. I can actually probably do that right here.
All right. On my camera, it seems to be busticated.
So let's see how well this can come out. This is an amazingly dark. This is a dark beer. You are not. This would please Liam no end.
Okay.
This is a beer you cannot possibly.
All right, my camera is working, so let me get the.
You cannot possibly see through. Now, I don't know how well your camera is going to pick up the can because of the light reflection.
Yeah.
I'm going to try one myself here. This is live photography, folks.
All right.
Doesn't get
so,
any better than this.
Yeah, we should be filming this. I can't focus. It won't focus for me, so you give it a shot.
Oh, that didn't. That wasn't the best thing to do.
Okay. I can't. No, it won't focus for some reason. All right. Well, anyway, we'll see if we can. You know what? Do they have a website? We can maybe get the can.
If we
you
go,
know, we'll
yeah, actually,
text
you know,
it that way, or we'll
go to Trillium.com.
Yeah,
we can do
this
that.
This isn't focusing for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, this because we have a black tabletop as well here, desktop rather. So, but if you go to Trillium.com,
okay,
you can see these cans, and this is all these cans. Of the very, and I had five of them, are all distinct. They're all different. I have an Indian Pale Ale left at home to enjoy. And one of the things that they advise is keep cold, enjoy fresh. That you really need to drink these beers, okay, relatively quickly. Though, this is 8.0 alcohol by volume. AB, as people usually will mention. You could store this. This will sit for about a year, maybe a little longer, because of the alcohol content. And over time, the longer you keep it, the flavor will change a bit.
Okay. All right, so.
You ready?
Slancha. And
okay.
Here we
so,
go.
So, no.
Okay.
You have
no.
to nose, have to
oh,
nose
oh.
it first.
I'm very thirsty.
You smell chocolate. First thing you get is
chocolate.
Yeah.
Okay. I do. That's weird, yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost like a chocolate powder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Not a chocolate candy.
No. It's not a sweet smell. It's like a dry chocolate.
Right.
Yep. But there's no coffee. You can't really get a coffee note yet.
Do I smell a little blueberry? Thought I did, but maybe not.
At the end, once you've
okay,
you've let it come in, that there is a little blueberry tang,
okay.
But there's not a whole lot of coffee taste. Again, a lot of the tastes come in stages as you sip it. Now, you're not going to take a big slug.
So you don't want to be thirsty when you do this.
Oh no! You know
I should have had some
Friday
water
night,
first.
My buddy came down from New Hampshire, and we went to Riverview for pizza, and then we went to True North in Ipswich, and then we made our way back to Old Planters in Beverly. And my buddy, who's not a craft beer drinker, made the comment, "Boy, you don't drink these fast."
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, well, not
one. You know, and we were there over at True North over probably 45 minutes, and we had one beer.
Yeah.
Well, I had a flight.
8%.
But they had one beer apiece.
Okay.
And it isn't. It's you sip and you enjoy it.
And this is a pint, and we've split this, so we each have 8 ounces.
Yes.
Okay, so you sip it to begin with?
Yes, and you want to... It's almost like, you know, a wine thing. You kind of swish it around, and what happens is...
I gulp wine too, Tim.
So you buy the $4 bottle, and when they come to the table...
$4 gallons, yeah.
When the waitress comes, you just say... You don't need to taste it. Just pour it in the glass. That's what my buddy does. You know, the witch comes over, right, presents the bottle. Do you want to taste it? He goes, "No, I'll just pour it." And I'll go, "I'll taste it. I'll do that."
All right, here we go.
Ooh,
very chocolatey.
Got the blueberry though.
I didn't get the blueberries. I got the chocolate.
I got a big shot of blueberry.
And I got almost an alcohol taste. I don't know what you call it, but the power of it. It's
And you got that on the back side.
Yeah.
On the back side. It's
heavy.
Oh, it's definitely thick. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the 8% mm-hmm. alcohol. But I got a big infusion of the blueberry mm-hmm. when I put it on the back. And a lot of beers, as I mentioned in the past, your tongue will read different tastes. Sometimes it could be the like the blueberry might be in it. Sours, the fruit flavor. You'll get a real tartness in the beginning, and sometimes you're going to get a tartness, but it's a much smoother sour taste. They don't pucker your lips.
And I just had another sip, and it was sort of I don't know how to describe it because I don't know what I'm experiencing, but it's creamy is the word that came to mind. My second taste.
It's good. Mm. Ooh. Wow. Again, you swish it around and you kind of, you know.
Have you had this one before?
This is the first time.
Okay.
This is the first time. I'm not getting a whole lot of coffee.
No. Okay, so.
And certain stouts, again, it all depends on. Now, this is an Ethiopian coffee beer.
And it says coffee milk stout, and that was that creamy. I think the milk.
That's the, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Milk stouts, again, will give you that creamier taste. Okay. A lot of nitro beers will have a real creaminess to it. Sam Adams, first nitro stout I had was a Sam Adams, and not sure what to delicious.
All right, so this is Spiritual Unrest, and it's actually brewed at Treehouse Brew in Charlton, Massachusetts. Where's Charlton?
Take 95 south, just before you get to the Rhode Island border.
Okay.
You get to, it's like the very last in Massachusetts.
I'm going to keep this can because I really am amazed by that label.
I figured you would.
It's just amazing. Plus the pure poetry on it. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Who knew? Who knew?
Well, you know, you look at I'll tell you, the company that has, a brewery that has really great labels is Down the Road Brewery out of Everett. They have, and it's almost like the characters on the labels were drawn by Greg and Tim Hildebrand that do epic fantasy pictures for calendars and for illustrations. They did Terry Brooks's series, his early Shannara, for those that are familiar with that. They also did for a number of years The Hobbit. Tolkien calendars, and I had a string of those.
All right, well, let's save that for another day so we can link to that, and we'll get the pictures of that. That sounds terrific.
Okay.
All right, so this is our lesson in what kind of a stout was this called?
This is a
coffee
milk stout. Okay. So, again, it's a blend. It's not your traditional stout. You've got the coffee added in there. You've got blueberry added in there. And this is the thing about, again, craft beers today. They have taken the traditional art of brewing and they have upped the ante, so to speak, with the creativity. It's not just a lager. It, how can we make the lagers different? How can we make the pilsners distinct? How can we make every type of beer a new experience for those who drink them? And again, not every individual find a beer acceptable to their palate. I go out and I'll have certain beers, and if I'm sitting at a bar or at a brewery, and I have one that I don't like, I will tell the person working at the bar specifically why I don't like it, what hasn't come across to me.
All right. Did Liam, as the beer snob, did he rate the beer?
We occasionally we did. He and I and his brother Tom, Tom would go write the beer advocate, and we would fire in a rating.
I wouldn't know how to rate this, so how would you rate it?
At the end of every episode of the Beer Snob, Liam would rate the individual's beers from A+. We even want A++ on one particular sour from Rodenbach. And we gave that like a 95 rating. We went right to Beer Advocate and gave it a 95 rating. But there was some stuff that we had that, I mean...
Okay.
We scratched the face. I would give this minimum an A-.
I'll go with that.
There are different tastes. There's nothing to dominate the blueberry balanced. Okay. As a presentation, I would like to have one of the tastes be a bit more dominant. Either the chocolate. I wouldn't want the blueberry to be dominant.
Right.
But I would like either the coffee or the chocolate to be just a bit more dominant.
Well, a toast in memory of Liam Flanagan, the beer snob.
To Liam. To the Liam. Beer snob.
This has been the Beer Pod with Tim Kearns. And this has been Connections with Bill Newell, myself, Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky, and our guest. Everything you want to know from bugs to beer, politics, and all the different colors of collars that there are in terms of the work industry. So thank you very much to Dr. Daniel Mulcair, political science professor at Salem State, to Wendell Waters, multimedia journalist from the Tri-Town Transcript. Also, of course, to Dave Radigan, teacher, comedian, and to Tim Kearns of the Beer Pod. That's it for now. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Connections will be back on Tuesday. Sports coming up, of course, live broadcast from the Songhurst Arena on Saturday. Check out our website, msonewsports.com.